Welcome to Backyard Oasis, a podcast designed by and for older adults living in the beautiful Pioneer Valley of Western Massachusetts and produced in the tech studios at Greenfield Community College in Greenfield, Massachusetts. Backyard Oasis reaches out to older adults who seek knowledge to help them live more thoughtfully, healthily, and happily, who hope to inspire others with their ideas, and who serve their communities in the interest of the greater good. We hope you join us frequently in our pleasant backyard oasis for wide-ranging conversations with a diversity of people who are growing older and want to talk about it.
Hello, I'm Christine Copeland with Backyard Oasis, and I'm here today with two members of the Blue Moon Ensemble, Philip Rowland and Michael Suter. Unfortunately, Richard Murphy, their fabulous sax player, couldn't make it today, and on some of the tracks we'll be playing for you, Blue Moon had a guest performer, Dan Fraser, on the trumpet. The track, All Blues, by Miles Davis, was recorded earlier at Greenfield Community Television, which we'll talk about later. Today we're here to talk about music, especially as it is relevant to older adults in our community because, like other art forms, making music never gets old. You know, you can retire from a profession or a job you've had for many years. Sometimes you have to retire, you have no choice, but you never have to retire from making music or enjoying it. That is one of the great pleasures of making art your whole life. Another thing I want you to talk about, because Blue Moon plays in different venues all around our Pioneer Valley, is the in-person experience, actually going to a gig or a concert and feeling the music as well as listening to it and watching the musicians interact with each other. That is definitely something that is missing from listening to music on your iPhone or even the radio. I've been listening to one of these musicians for the last 60 years, when he got his first guitar, with all the evolution that entailed, to now, when he's laying down his hot licks with these amazing friends and fellow musicians. So let's get started.
Okay, so I am Philip Rowland, and I am the guitar player with Blue Moon, and I happen to be the brother of Christine Copeland. There's a connection right there. And sometime, maybe 15 years back, I taught the renewable energy course here at Greenfield Community College for one semester and enjoyed it. So I feel a connection to GCC for sure. And I've played here actually a few times with the Blue Moon Ensemble. So
my name is Michael Suter. I'm a double bassist, among many other things. My connection to GCC is I've played here on probably a couple dozen, maybe more occasions for various local organizations, Franklin Community Co-op and Nelquit among them, and a few other events.
And your instrument is?
Double bass.
The double bass, yeah. So that brings us to the main, reason for having this interview. We're talking about music today, in particular the Blue Moon Ensemble. This group plays throughout the valley. So I'd kind of like to know how you guys, did you even know each other via GCC, or how did you meet and how did you start playing music together?
Well, as I recall, I was taking your son, Will, to play piano with Peter Farber, another musician who was playing at that time. And we met, and I told him that I played guitar. And one thing led to another. I played with him for a little while. And then he introduced me to Michael. And Michael and I started playing, and we hit it off. And at one point, Richard, our current saxophone player, had not been involved, but we had a certain gig to play at that time down at Cushman's in Amherst. And Peter could not make it for various reasons, but he asked Richard if Richard could come and play. And we had a very dear friend who is unfortunately has passed away. And the four of us played. And after that gig, that concert, we were just beaming. We had just found this spirit, this flow. It just clicked. It just clicked. And from that point on, we decided we wanted to keep on playing together one way or another, even for whether it be for only pleasure, or playing for gigs or various things. And so we kept on playing various gigs here and there. Atlas Farms has been one. We've played over at Look Park way back when. We've played the River Valley Co-op on a number of occasions, and other gigs. You could probably see most of them at our website, the Blue Moon Ensemble, or bluemoonensemble.com.
So the Blue Moon Ensemble plays jazz.
Well,
but okay,
we
let's
don't
talk
really
a little
like
bit more
the term
about
jazz,
that.
And the reason why we don't like the term jazz is that jazz is not very popular among a lot of people because they associate that with all these post-bop era stuff where people were just playing lots of notes and all over the place and stuff that was not very melodic. Whereas we prefer to play back from the swing era or basically melodic stuff. It can be modern as well, but we prefer the starting from the swing era, you know, composers like Duke Ellington or Miles Davis. I just love Miles Davis. We all love, you know, what can you not love about Miles Davis? And other people, you know, Herbie Hancock, you know, Wayne Shorter, people like that who just play very, very melodic things that we feel our audience can relate to. So we try to talk about composers more than jazz, you know, because jazz turns a lot of, the term jazz turns a lot of people off.
Right, right. But there may be jazz that they would love listening to. And
exactly.
They just, yeah.
Exactly.
And is that what you refer to when you talk about the American standards?
Yes.
So what you were just talking about, that sort
yes.
of litany of, uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Great. So, Michael, you have a number of interests, some of which Phil has told me about. You've done Tai Chi, actually, out on our property. And when you've come, I've noticed a big, long boat on the top of your car. And so it sounds like there are sort of meditative pursuits that you have in your life. And aren't you also a mushroom connoisseur?
Yes.
Yeah. Which, to me, boy, you have to be in a certain zone to find the right mushrooms. So can you talk a little bit about that, about those interests in your life and how they relate to this music that you do?
To music? Sure. It's, it's sometimes hard to find a direct correlation, but they all do fit together quite nicely. So beginning with Tai Chi, I've been studying what's called Chen family Tai Chi, or Chen style Tai Chi, since about 2000, 2001 with the same master. It's a form of Tai Chi that's particularly physically challenging and looks a lot like Kung Fu. It looks a lot like Shaolin Kung Fu. So that's, it's an extremely meditative and very repetitive and very, it demands a lot of physical presence in one's body. You really have to be centered in your body. You have to know your own feet. You have to know what's going on in your stomach. You have to know that your body is relaxed. You have to really put your consciousness into your body. And that's largely what Tai Chi practice is bringing one's consciousness into the physical realm in the most grounded way possible. And then you get a lot of feedback from your body. So this does correlate to music in a significant way because when you're playing an instrument, you want to ground yourself in the instrument and in the tones that you're creating and the rhythm. And Tai Chi is very rhythmic. It's very much centered around one's breath. So one moves with one's breath in Tai Chi. And when I think most musicians are, at least to one degree or another, focused on their, they're so focused on their instrument. But if, like, if your breathing becomes off, or you're, you know, you feel nervous, then your energy might come up, and that's when you might make mistakes. But if you can stay grounded in your instrument and really, you know, relaxed into it, I think that makes for a much stronger performance. And, you know, you can really get into exploring your own ideas in that, you know, in that zone, so to speak. As far as the large boat you're speaking of, that is a... that is an ocean kayak.
Oh.
And I'm also an ocean kayaker, meaning I do go out on the ocean, and kayaking is a, you know, I do it in a pretty vigorous manner, with very large waves, often very far offshore. And it's, you know, it's challenging. You have to kind of be willing to ride the waves, so to speak, and not, you don't want to try and go against what's happening in the ocean, because you're not going to win. You've got to really align yourself with what's happening, and not freak out, not like become nervous or worried. You know, it's easy to become, you know, just become overwhelmed. And kayaking will, you know, you have to get used to that sense of you're in the awe of the, you know, you're in awe of the ocean,
yeah,
and its power.
Yeah.
So that relates to music too, because you want to follow the flow of music.
Right,
know.
And probably if you're able to do that, I imagine if there's a mistake, if somebody makes a mistake or something, being able to handle that.
Right,
with some equanimity and just move on.
Exactly, just keep moving through it. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
do it as if you meant it.
Yeah.
Really, yeah.
Yeah. When you guys are playing, there are two things I want to talk about. One is how you communicate. You know, I see you looking at each other, and I wondered if you could talk about that a little bit. And also when and how you decide who has that...
solo.
Who has a solo. And what... Yeah, is that planned in advance? Because when you solo, you're improvising, right? You can't really...
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you practice your solo. So anyway, could you talk about
that? That's one of the things I love about, quote, jazz, unquote, is that it's all improvisational. So that means being very much in the moment and in the zone, so to speak. And it becomes a meditation because, as Michael says, it's very much a matter of being very present and listening to the others. And for the most part, guitar and bass are what's called the rhythm section. Although there are plenty of times when Michael and I will play just as a duo, just him and myself. But it's paramount. It's all about, in my mind, listening to the other musicians, listening and then getting your expression in a way while you're listening, because there is a call and response, give and take sort of thing that happens through the music, at least with the good musicians. And I've found with the musicians that, you know, I don't consider the ones I want to play with, they sometimes just, especially at many of these, you know, jazz jams, they'll just wait for their moment to play, and then bam, they play their thing. They don't really listen. They just, you know, shoot through. And then after that, they sit back and wait until it's their time to shoot through. Whereas the way I like to play with Michael and Richard, especially, you know, the three of us, there's a real listening and communication that happens through the music. And so it does become very meditative, matter of being present, totally present in the moment while listening, while expressing, that combination of the three. And it's a wonderful experience. You know, every time we practice, every time we play, every time I always come away just feeling energized, you know, just like it's just been a wonderful experience. When I'm not totally present, and then I come away feeling, oh, I wish I had, you know, just been a little bit more present. I wish I had listened a little more. I wish I had, you know, done something or other during the gig. But the beauty of playing again with Michael and Richard and the other musicians we play with, Bill is a piano player. Bill Winslow is a piano player. We play keyboards. He really listens, and he, you know, he tunes in, and it's just great being with such good musicians.
Yeah.
My experience.
So that brings up in me the question of, I'm not quite sure how to phrase this, but from what I understand, I am not a music aficionado. So from what I understand, jazz is very sort of constructed. You know, it's there's a real structure to it.
Yes.
And there are people who listen to you, I imagine, and they know a lot more about what they're listening to than me. I listen to you, and it sounds nice, but I'm not really 100% sure. I don't understand the underlying structure. And so I wondered if you could just talk about that a little bit and how you play for both people like me and people who know what they're listening to.
Okay, I'll start pretty quickly, and then Michael will add whatever I missed out on. Jazz, in my opinion, is just an opportunity to improvise and an opportunity to improvise with other people. And so the song and the melody of the song has its own structure, and it has the first thing we do typically always is we go through the melody of the song. And then after that, we go through the same harmonic structure as the melody of the song and provide an opportunity for each player who wants to play on the instrument to improvise whatever they feel from that song. And so we go through the same structure as the melody. We give each other an opportunity to improvise within that melody. And then we end. We repeat the melody of the tune, and then that's it. That's the end of it. And so we're often looking at things called charts, and the charts go through the harmonic structure. Okay, here we play this chord, then that chord, and that chord. And then here we have a bridge, and we play this chord, then that chord, or whatever. And then we follow that. So that's the general structure. What I do when I'm playing is first and foremost, I tune into what Michael is doing, because the bass and the drums, in my estimation, are the heart of the tune, and I will dovetail, and my whole thing is dovetailing with what Michael does. You know, I play stuff on the top, so that if you were looking at a drum set, for example, Michael would be the bass and the snare, and I'd be like the hi-hat, you know, rhythmically speaking. It's almost as if that's a metaphor for how we play, in my mind, in the way I experience it. And then the instrument, Richard, the horns will come up with the melody, you know, unless there are no horns or nobody to play the melody, in which case I'll play the melody, but usually the horns will play the melody itself. We provide the background structure. So I hope that answers your question.
Very well. I feel like it's going to make a difference in terms of how I listen to music from now on. And Michael, how do you see yourself in the context of what you and your instrument, I mean, as in the context of what Phil just talked about. And before you start, I mean, I have noticed that when you play that bass, sometimes it can sound pretty sophisticated to me. Like, okay.
And at the same time, he's holding down the fort.
Yeah.
Michael holds down the fort.
Yeah.
Right. So as a bass player, generally I'm not only anchoring the chordal structure of a piece, but I'm also, it's mostly a single tone, you know, where I'm playing one note at a time. So I'm also sort of constructing a counter melody to what the... to the melody that's going on. So melody is this thing that goes from one place to another. It's like takes you on a little journey, so to speak. And there's a lot of ways you can harmonize that melody. So even though we're looking at generally looking at charts that give us a basic structure that supports this melody to get it from one place to another, functionally speaking, and this is without getting into the weeds of music theory, like you're always trying to, you know, support the melody. You want the melody to come through so the listeners will like remember the melody, and they, you know, you're also providing counterpoint to the melody so that you can add something like a call. You know, the melody is a call, and you're responding. So as a bass player, my function is to drive things forward, to really, and also determine where on the beat, because a beat is a much more nuanced thing than many people realize. You can hit a beat ahead, you can hit it directly on, or you can hit it behind. So this sort of like sophistication around where you're playing with a beat and how your notes express themselves, so to speak, is a lot of what I think the bass player, you know, is really should be thinking about. And just to say, when I play with Phil, Phil's one of these people that I've played with who we can match each other's tones and rhythmically, and like in a way that's very rare, I think, with among the musicians that I played with, where there's like a really like psychic kind of bond there. We can really, almost sound like one instrument sometimes, which is pretty cool, even if we're all over the place doing, you know, more sophisticated, more quote-unquote jazzy kind of things. I think that's one of the remarkable things about our collaboration is we're able to do that. So hopefully that answers your question.
It does answer my question. It gives me a much clearer sense of who you are in the group. And I'm sorry that Richard isn't here, for example, so that you could. But if people want to see how Richard sort of fits into your music, they can go to the YouTube movie that will be posted, you know, after this vodka. Podcast, and we'll give you the dates for that. But we've talked about a lot in a short amount of time. So what I'd like to talk about now is who your audience is. Who do you enjoy playing for? Or do you have favorite places where you play? And where can people come and listen to you play in person? And you know, so that they can hear your music not just through the YouTube, but where can they hear your music? And also talk about your rehearsals that you do at the Weldon, because I don't know whether they could come and listen to you rehearse, but...
We do rehearse at the Weldon's typically on Wednesdays between 11 and 1, although that may change based on the availability of the events, because we play in the event space there. We rehearse, it's open to anyone in the Weldon or anyone in the community to come check us out. We love having an audience. We love getting that energetic, you know, feedback or transfer from the audience. And so we play there, and we're good musicians. We're not great marketers. We have a fella who's coming on to help us do the marketing. We typically play at places like Atlas Farms. We play there once a month, typically, at least during the warm weather. We'll play outside. will often play at River Valley Market. We've played at various sort of more corporate functions. For example, Look Park, mm-hmm. you know, they had some sort of corporate dinner and we played there. We have played for the community co-op, Franklin County Co-op here at GCC. And we might be playing with a larger group because we can expand as needed. Sometimes we'll bring on a keyboard or, you know, an extra trumpet player, an extra horn, so to speak, a drummer, sometimes a female vocalist.
Oh, I just want to add also, you played at my art opening, and that was fabulous. You were able to play outside so people could come out and listen to the music and then also see the art. If anybody is an artist out there, keep these guys in mind, because that's a nice combination.
We're going to be playing a number of gigs for the, and that was nice. That was way fun. That was one of the best concerts we ever did, or gigs, I should say. We will be playing for a number of senior center type gigs that are covered by the Massachusetts Cultural Arts Council. I believe that's what it's called. They've given us grants for about 6 or 8 gigs, as I recall, something like that. And that will include the Greenfield Community Senior Center, I think. There's mm-hmm. one that we're going to be doing at the Weldon. There's a couple down in Springfield. We might do, we're planning on doing something down in Springfield for what used to be the Bings Arts Center down there, where we'll be playing a number of movie snippets, you know, snippets from some of the great movies out there, along with the music that was associated with those movies. And so that'll be interesting. We might be doing some performances where seniors come in and have dinners, various dinners, and then they have an hour or so of our music and we play for them. So there's a lot more that's
in the works
for this coming year.
Great. Yeah. That's great.
And I'll certainly update the website to the Blue Moon Ensemble website.
Great. The Blue Moon Ensemble website.
I think it's bluemoonensemble.com.
Okay. So we will be putting those links in to this podcast and to the YouTube movie. So get on top of that website because people will likely be going to it to see what's up.
I just wanted to add a little something there. I'll speak a little bit about my history. What brought me to, quote, jazz, unquote, is I spent, I've been playing guitar ever since I was 11 years old, and here I am now, 68 or whatever, a senior. And for years, I played with my brother, and then when I went out to Denver for professional reasons,
You were an engineer.
I was an architectural engineer, and I used that to basically fund my addiction, which was music, which is buying all the guitars, you know, and amps and gizmos that I needed. But at that point, I was playing mainly rock, pop rock, but I was doing it in the studio, and playing in the studio is a very, very different way of playing from jazz, but it has many of the same rigorous things because there in the studio, you have to work over and over and over and over to get the right part down, and that's the way it works with all rock musicians, pop rock musicians. You gotta just play it over and over until you come up with a part that really works, because in the studio, that's part of writing a song. And I did that not only with my brother's projects, but with a number of projects there in Denver. So on weekends and other times, I'd be there working in the studio, working real hard. And at a certain point, I became tired of the pop rock scene of playing out and just playing just your parts and songs and all of that. And I started wanting to add jazz to it in order to spice things up, make them more interesting. And over time, I just fell in love with jazz instead, and I lost my interest in pop rock. But I had to learn the theory in order to work, you know, do the charts in a studio context. So I learned the theory pretty well, studied people like Joe Pass and Kenny Burrell and people like that, you know, their theory, Miles Davis. But when I moved back to the Happy Valley back in 2012, I was ready for a change. And that's when I really wanted to get into playing out, playing jazz. And that's when the universe provided, in the sense of meeting up eventually, you know, with Michael and all of that. And Michael's a very, he'll tell you his history. He's a very trained musician. He knows the theory. He knows all that stuff. In fact, when I have questions, I often ask him, you know, hey, how does this work? So
I would like to hear about that, Michael. And I just find it interesting that both of you, you worked in the photovoltaic field for a while. I find it interesting that both of you have that sort of engineering bent as well. But tell us how you came into the bass and and music.
Sure. I mean, when I kind of fell in love with the bass as an instrument at about age 13 or 14, mm-hmm. just the sound of it suddenly like hit me, and I just I had to find the way to make that sound. It really just so moving to me, and I can remember like the day and time when that happened, just sort of like just overtook me. And so I started playing electric bass like age 14, and I very quickly got into fretless, which was kind of unusual because most rock players don't, you know, they want the frets. They want to have, you know, and if people who don't know, it's a, that's a little piece of metal that's on the neck of a bass or guitar that helps you play the right note. And from almost the beginning, I was playing fretless basses. And that led me quickly towards the upright bass, which is what I majored in college. And I spent a good bit of time learning theory. I was very interested in theory, and I still am, the theory of music, how and why things function so that our ears will make sense of them. 'Cause if you don't do that, it becomes much more problematic to enjoy music. It's I mean, there is music out there and types of jazz that are very free, but your ear still wants something to go from one place to another, to its you know, its logical conclusion, and then to turn around back to where you started usually. So I went to college for upright bass performance at University of Connecticut. During those years, I was spending like 6 hours a day in practice rooms, just you know, trying to get it right, playing instruments that were of very low quality. So I had to work very hard to try and get them to sound good, which is, you know, there's a lot of analogies to that in other parts of my life. Like cross-country skiing around here is another one that I do a lot of. And like the conditions are terrible. Usually you're skiing on ice, so you have to really, you know, you have to deal with challenges in order to like really dial in your technique. And that's how it was in college too, like playing awful instruments. But now I play good instruments and can
it's
really like, it's a joy. It's truly a joy to play instruments that do what you want them to. And that tones that come out of them are really pleasant, and you can really do something and shape them into, you know, what you want them to be. And that's, for me, music, as a lot of my joy of playing music is just in tone. I just absolutely love the tone of my instrument, and Phil makes incredible, you know, his tone's amazing. And it's, you know, just like, it's like sculpting with sound, really, just putting so much of yourself into that. And that's, it's a really meditative, so I went through a period where I was meditating, literally meditating 2 hours a day for 6 years. And that was another transformative event. But I think that I was able to do that partially because of my background in playing music.
Yeah, and just practicing.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow, amazing.
And he plays many different styles of music as well.
Yeah, I do.
He plays reggae, he plays.
Yeah, I started in jazz in the 90s. With a jazz poetry group. So, and that just grew and grew and grew. I've played in like workshop groups, which would just get together every week and with not much intention to play out and just learn tune after tune after tune. So, so when you know like 300 or 400 tunes, then you kind of get the idea of how this whole thing functions, you know.
Yeah. Well, I invite our audience to come and learn some of those tunes with you guys. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to me. I feel like I've gained so much insight just from this conversation. You've offered me a little bit of a glimpse into the depth of what you do, which is really fascinating and wonderful. So, and I think that we just invite people to visit you at your website to find out where you're playing, to watch the really fun YouTube movie that was shot at Greenfield Community Television, and I'm going to be at some of these gigs that you play this summer. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This was fun.
This concludes today's podcast. We're always looking for new ideas, so feel free to reach out to Judy Raper, Associate Dean of Community Engagement at Greenfield Community College at 413-775-1819 if you have an idea you'd love to share. Special thanks to the creators of Backyard Oasis, Denise Schwartz, Chad Fuller, Dennis Lee, and Christine Copeland. Have a great day.